Thanks, Nathan. On 88.1 WYPR, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Before we begin today, a heads up on Friday's show. We're going to tell you who won the 2016 Baker Artist Awards this year. They'll be announced tomorrow night at 8:30 on Maryland Public Television in a special edition of their terrific program, Artworks. These are awards that are given to individual artists in a variety of disciplines. The Baker Artist Awards are one of our area's most important initiatives to support the work of creative people in Maryland, and we'll talk about it on Friday. This morning, pretrial motions in the case of Officer Edward Nero took place yesterday. His trial was scheduled to begin today, but prosecutors asked for a one-day delay because a power outage at their offices last weekend prevented them from being able to prepare for the case. Nero is the second of six officers to be tried in the case involving the arrest and death of Freddie Gray, who died after suffering injuries while in police custody 13 months ago. Officer Nero will not have a jury trial. Rather, he has asked Judge Barry Williams to make a ruling after hearing the evidence in his case. In March, the Court of Appeals ruled that Officer William Porter and Garrett Miller are compelled to testify in the trials of the other five officers. Porter's own trial ended in a hung jury in December. He'll be retried at a later date. So to get us up to date on all of this, we turn once again to our legal eagles, Edward Smith and David Jaros. Edward Smith is an attorney in private practice. He has served in the office of the state's attorney, and he has argued cases in front of the Supreme Court. David Jaros is an associate professor at the University of Baltimore School of Law, whose scholarly focus is on criminal law. Good to see you guys. Thanks for coming in.
Good to see you, Tom.
So, Edward Smith, the charges here, we got to make very clear, are very different in the case of Officer Nero than they were in Officer Porter. Officer Porter, most importantly, was charged with involuntary manslaughter. Mr. Nero is not charged with that. So in other words, he has not been charged in causing Mr. Gray's death.
That's correct, Tom. Absolutely.
So that's going to make it a different kind of deal here. I mean, a lot of people are focused on the injuries, David Jaros, the injuries and the actual passing of Mr. Gray. But that, in a way, doesn't have much to do with this trial. Huh?
That's right. In fact, the dramatic video that was very moving and I think gave rise to a lot of this case is not central to the charge even of assault here. The assault is based on an allegation that the police simply made an unlawful arrest, and therefore any of the touching in the course of the arrest would have been unjustified and would be a misdemeanor second-degree assault. The injuries that are apparent in the video, the cries from Mr. Gray, are not actually relevant to whether or not the assault occurred.
So, Eddie, the fact that the officer himself, Mr. Nero, has requested a bench trial instead of a jury trial. The Porter trial was a jury trial. The jury could not come to a unanimous decision on any of four counts, so there was a hung jury. But Officer Nero has chosen a different strategy. If you were defending Officer Nero, do you think that's the advice you would give him?
Well, ultimately, it's his decision, but I usually like 12 minds as opposed to one making a decision. I trust juries. That is my bread and butter. And the deal is that if one of them says, I can't make up my mind or I believe that he's not guilty, then there you go. And the issues on appeal are dilated as a result of taking a court trial. You can no longer complain that you did that venue should have been changed out of Baltimore City. And there are a host of other issues that a judge in his discretion makes where he is both the decider of the law and the facts. I like to usually break them up so that there's a situation, but that's up to his legal team. I have my way of cooking soup, and they have their way of cooking.
I would add to that. I think Ed's right, but there are some considerations that make this somewhat of a unique situation. The first is that there's been a question in this case about whether it was appropriate to try the case here in Baltimore, and the defendant brought a venue motion, which was denied. And there may have been concern in this case.
Yeah, so they've tried to move the trial out of, whether it was a jury trial or bench trial, they've tried to move it out of Baltimore, and that didn't
fly. That's right. And so there's some question about the defendant may have wondered whether or not he would get a jury that wasn't in some way already convinced of his guilt, based on what they'd seen in the news or based on concerns about the unrest. But I think even more so in this case, I actually don't think that's what drove the defendant's decision here. Based on what we've sort of been able to read in terms of the tea leaves about what the charges are. This case may turn on some pretty sharp technical legal points about what the officer was authorized to do, when he had reasonable suspicion to detain, when he had probable cause to arrest, when he was legally allowed to search the defendant. And those cases which rest on sort of technical legal issues, the defendant might have just been more comfortable that a judge won't misapply the law.
So, Ed Smith, I mean, is this theory in the case that the prosecutors appear to have, which is to say that the arrest itself was not legal, it was a violation of Mr. Gray's Fourth Amendment rights. As Dave is mentioning here, this might be something that in order to parse that out, you really got to be a legal scholar like Judge Williams is, rather than a jury. But what? How does that theory from the prosecution strike you as a strategy?
Well, they're on a tightrope, there's no doubt. And they may not have a net at the end of the trial or at the end of a motion for judgment of acquittal, because it's pretty clear that anybody who runs in a high crime area can, in fact, be stopped. Terry versus Ohio is the case in which this is pretty well borne out. But once again, it really is a very close call. And once again, close calls, sometimes a judge can be very instrumental in making that as a legal matter and saying that he would vote for acquittal. I take a different view of that kind of risk based on who the jurist is.
Attorney Edward Smith, he's here along with Dave Jaros, and we're talking about the trial of Edward Nero, which begins tomorrow. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. So, Dave, what about the fact that if Judge Williams is going to be making the decision, first of all, is there any doubt that there will be a decision? Is there any chance that, you know, something gets hung up? I mean, I shouldn't even use the word hung, you know, but I'm assuming there's definitely going to be a verdict here. Right?
Hung is the key word. We won't see a hung jury here. And that may have even been a factor in the defendant's decision. He will get some finality out of this trial.
What about the fact that then Judge Williams will also be presiding over other trials, which very well could be jury trials? Doesn't the judge have to form a theory of the case himself?
So,
and which is to say, you know, if he's presiding over a jury trial, does that make him then biased for the next ones?
There are some things we just sort of presume about our legal system. While we know judges are human beings and they are affected by what they see and what they hear in the system, there is a presumption that the judge can sort of divide those things off. What's strange in a case like this is the judge will make decisions about what is admissible in terms of the evidence. So he, for example, yesterday held that the sound on the video would not be relevant to the charges. So while they can show the video for where the officers were, they wouldn't play the volume. That's interesting in part because, of course, the judge has already heard the video. But in the course of the trial, when it's being offered into evidence, he'll turn off the sound and it will be presumed that he will ignore the fact that he knows what is then on the tape.
And as a practical matter, Ed Smith, can human beings do that? Can they say, oh, yeah, I'm looking at this video with no audio and I'm forgetting what the audio is?
As a practical matter, the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court says that, yes, judges have that ability. If they are the best of us, then they can departmentalize what is important and they can apply what is the law and ignore the rest. And that is black letter law. And in application, one has to wonder, because as you say, we are all human.
Yeah.
And God knows that is a factor in my mind, but the court says that that's okay.
What about the fact that some have already complained that the fact that it's not going to be a jury trying Officer Nero takes the community out of the process, and which is to say, if he gets a not guilty verdict, how's that going to, if you're his defense lawyer, or you know, put yourself in the position of the people who are defending him, how does that fly in terms of this, you know, very volatile, heated environment we're in?
The officer has a right to a court or a jury trial. and he has a right to select which he chooses under the circumstances. So the community has to respect the fact that that is the law and they would be entitled to the same right. Unfortunately, sometimes in the best of all possible worlds, we don't get the best of all possible things.
Yeah. And we should make it clear that this is Officer Nero's call. I mean, this is the judge isn't ordering this, right? So Dave Jaros, I understand there's also going to be new trials, or new prosecutors rather, in the trials of William Porter and Garrett Miller. Those are trials that haven't taken place yet, but it has to do with the fact that the two attorneys who were trying Officer Porter the first time, now we have Nero's trial with these other officers are going to be compelled to testify. So now the prosecution, Marilyn Mosby's office, has to come up with two different people to try Porter and Miller. What's that all about?
Right. So the prosecutor has done something somewhat unusual here in compelling co-defendants to testify against their fellow officers, but doing so by giving them what's called derivative use immunity, essentially saying, we're still going to try you for your crime, even though that crime arises out of the same set of circumstances we're making you testify about. But what we're doing is we will not use the testimony you give in court against you in your own trial. This is based on a Supreme Court case called Castigar. Now, what that requires is that the prosecutor has the burden to show that the case they ultimately bring against those officers who are compelled to testify is based on evidence entirely separate from their compelled testimony. And that means these attorneys who have been appointed to try those cases not only have to be different from the attorneys who are trying the current case, but they can't listen to the compelled testimony, they can't watch the news, there can be no aspect of their ultimate trial that is derived in any way from the compelled testimony.
So Lisa Phelps and Sarah David, who are going to be the people who are going to replace Mr. Schatzgau and Ms. Bledsoe, are really going to have to pretend that the current trial isn't happening.
And I think Mr. Schatzgau,
good luck,
should prepare these attorneys before the compelled testimony. So All the information needs to be shared before the compelled testimony, because after that, there needs to be a wall.
This is fascinating, you guys. I mean, this is a terrible situation for Mr. Gray and his family and holding, but I got to tell you, it's fascinating.
Yeah, but Tom, there have to be rules.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to be rules. All right, and we will have you back to explain the rules again and again. Appreciate it. Thanks to you both. Appreciate
it. Man, it's a pleasure being here with you.
All right. Edward Smith is an attorney in private practice here in Baltimore. David Jaros, associate professor of the University of Baltimore School of Law. Stay tuned to WIPR for complete coverage of all the trials and the officers accused in the arrest and death of Freddie Gray. WIPR's Kenneth Burns, and we'll have continuing analysis from our legal experts, Ed Smith and Dave Jaros. Coming up after a break for the news, Nathan introduces us to some innovative entrepreneurs from the Maryland Institute College of Art. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Speaking to Nathan, here he is.